Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in to the In the Truck podcast. On this episode, April 19th, my 16th wedding anniversary. So I'm going to tell you a story. This is probably my best story, so hopefully I do a good job telling it. In February of 2001, I found myself through a series of bad decisions living in Raleigh, North Carolina. And initially, I was working at an Ace Hardware store. And then I added a second job tending bar at night because the girl that I moved to North Carolina with and I broke up nearly immediately. And then I moved out and basically I had a ton of free time on my hands. What actually happened was I was going to the bar as a customer on a nearly daily basis, this little Irish pub called O'Malley's. I don't even remember how I found it. I started going there, and nice little Irish dive bar. People who worked there were nice. And one day I was sitting there having my beer, and the owner came over to me and said that his sister was getting married, and two of the bartenders had agreed to tend bar at her wedding, and one of them had backed out, and the remaining bartender who agreed to do it said that he should get me to also do it, and he would pay me $100 cash, and it was like 4 hours or something like that. So that was pretty good money. And I thought, I have nothing to do, why not? So I went and did it, and the other bartender, Jill, that wanted me to go there, ended up being a friend of mine, and we did that together, and I was just myself, you know, talking to people and making drinks. It's just beer and wine and nothing exciting. And at one point, I'm talking to a man who was at the wedding. The owner was this NASCAR guy, had a NASCAR t-shirt, NASCAR ball cap on when I met him. And a thick southern accent, kind of chubby fella. Nice guy. And then at the wedding, I'm talking to this older gentleman, probably in his late 50s, early 60s. Clearly ex-military, very fit. And between the haircut and just the way he held his body, you could tell he was former military. And he had an accent, a pretty thick accent. Started talking. Turned out he was a former IDF Special Forces guy. And so I tried to get him to tell me some stories, and he was chatty, but not about that. I didn't push it. And so he was retired and whatever. And come to find out that the man I'm talking to was the owner of the bar's dad. And what happened next was, he told his son that he should hire me as a bartender because I did a good job. Now, the bar, O'Malley's, at the time, didn't have a manager, and the owner wasn't super hands-on. So he would come in once in a while for a little bit, but wasn't there every day even. And the place was like an asylum run by the inmates. And he offered me the job. And basically it was tips only. We got paid $2.13 an hour, but he reported our income, so basically you get a paycheck every week for like $6. And then you didn't owe taxes. So he reported the tip. I don't know. I don't know what he was doing. But anyway, you got like this little paycheck of nothing, and then you get to keep your tips. So I started working there. Partly for the money, but partly just because I had nothing to do in the evenings, and it seemed like something to do to kill the time. So I worked there probably around June, I think I started working there. And through the summer and the next fall. And then come winter time, and I don't really remember if it was December or January. It might have been the last week of December. It was certainly after Christmas. It might have been the first week of January. This group of guys comes in, I think four of them, very obviously military guys. and accompanying them are a few women, one of which was so beautiful that I couldn't imagine talking to her. Basically, I looked at her and I thought, oh dear God, I'm never going to be able to talk to her. What am I going to do? So while they come in and seat yourself, so they come in and go try to find a table to sit down at, I'm racking my brain for what am I going to do with this girl who I need to talk to, but I'm not going to be able to do it. And by the way, that's never happened to me before or since. I'm not shy, and I'm not intimidated by other people. And here was this blonde-haired beauty, 6 feet tall, gorgeous, and something was very different. So what I decided, I was working that night with my friend Relay, who we used to do this running gag. I'm 6'6". At the time, I probably weighed about 210 maybe. He was 5'1", 5'2", probably weighed 130 pounds. Super good guy. And we had this gimmick going where we would tell people that we were twin brothers. Like that movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito. And I'm not kidding you, people believed us. So they'd say like, oh, can I get a beer? And I'm like, let me ask my brother, hang on. And they'd say, oh, you're brothers? And I'm like, yeah, we're twins. And people would be like, seriously? And we'd be like, you can't see it? And then people would be like, yeah, I guess I kind of see it. He was 5'2", bald, with a big beard. And I was 6'6", full head of hair. No beard. What they were seeing, I have no idea. But anyway, so that was a fun thing we used to do. But I went over to Relay and I said, all right, here's the deal. I said, what? I go, see the blonde that came in with those guys? And she goes, yep. I go, no matter what happens, don't serve her a drink. So he's like, all right. Like I said, there's no manager, there's no owner. We could do whatever we want. It was a free-for-all. And so one of the guys comes up to the bar and orders a round for everybody. We serve them as drinks, working the bar the whole night, tables. It's a little like pub kind of. There was tables and we served food and we didn't have any waiters, so we would have to do that ourselves too. And one of the other female guests in that party came up to the bar and was talking to us, and I was talking to her. And then she went on. Then karaoke started, because there was karaoke night in the second room, like the adjacent room. And a bunch of those people from that group went over to the karaoke. And some didn't. And among those who didn't was this gorgeous blonde. And she came over to the bar, and I kind of went to the other end of the bar to help a customer, and Relay was there, and she tried to order a drink, and he didn't even respond to her being there. He served a guy next to her, served the guy on the other side of her. So she got mad, and she came down to where I was at and tried to shout drink order at me. And I did the same thing. I got the guy next to her a Jack and Coke, the guy on the other side of her a beer. Then I walked away. And at one point I looked up and she was talking to this troll guy. I can't think of the guy's name. It's like this troll guy who sat in the same bar stool. I wish I could think of his name. He sat in the same bar stool every night and drank pints of beer. And he sat there for hours and hours and hours and drank his beer. And he was a nice enough guy, but, you know, obviously not a lot going on in his life. And she was talking to him. And then she walked away. And I went over to him and I go, how'd you get that girl to talk to you? I was like blown away that, you know, she would talk to a human being. Especially that guy. I go, hey, how'd you get that girl to talk to you? And he's like, I don't know. She started talking to me. I said, what was she talking to you about? He goes, she was talking to me about you guys being jerks. I said, what do you mean? She said that you won't serve her a drink. And I was like, oh, and I laughed. My plan was working. So another half an hour or so goes by, and I finish doing what I'm doing. I turn around, and she's standing there with this really angry look on her face. And she goes, what the hell's the matter with you? And I said, what do you mean? And she says, why won't you serve me a drink? And I said, honestly? And she goes, yeah, honestly. I said, well, I couldn't figure out how to talk to you, and I knew I wanted to talk to you. And then I figured, you know what? If we ignore you, there's no way you're used to that treatment. And that would get your attention, and then you'd come talk to me. So apparently that's how it works. She had gone to Relay and yelled at him, wanting to know what the hell was going on, and he told her, go talk to the big fella. So that was it. So then we started talking. She thought that was funny. So it's not always the most obvious thing that works, right? You got to evaluate the situation. My hunch was that this type of gorgeous, tall woman would go out in public and be harassed constantly by men trying to talk to her everywhere she goes. And I thought in that situation, the way you stand out from the crowd is to do the opposite. Refuse to talk to her. 100% successful. One of the more brilliant and insightful moments of my entire life. So the night keeps going on, and now I'm trying to figure out how to get her phone number, but I don't know how to do that. And the story comes out. They're all from Tampa, Florida. They come up to North Carolina because these guys are about to ship out and go to Afghanistan. This is right at the end of 2001, beginning of 2002. They're among the first guys going. They were, two of them were Marine Force recon guys who'd come over to the Army, and the other two were Army guys, and I think they were all Rangers, and they were about to go to Afghanistan. And so the girls had come up to say au revoir, and a couple of the girls were girlfriends, and the one friend was a wannabe a girlfriend, and my beauty here was just a friend coming to see off the gang. So and they checked into they'd gone to Bragg and down in Fayetteville. The guys were tired of Fayetteville. They'd been up there training for a couple months and they were sick of it, and they were sick of seeing Army people all the time, I guess. And so they said, we don't want to stay here, we got to leave for the weekend, we want to go to Raleigh because that's more fun. And they took I-95 up to 40 and then to the 440 Beltway and got off the Glenwood Avenue exit and checked in the first hotel they ran into, and then went to the hotel, and they said, where's a good place we can go, a nice quiet place we can go and drink and talk and whatever. And he said, oh, a couple doors down is O'Malley's, that's a nice quiet place. I later went to that hotel to talk to that guy. I never saw him in my life. How he knew to recommend it, I have no idea, but thank God he did. So now I've got the girl to talk to me. She's trying to get me to drink with them, to do shots with them, and I told her I can't drink while I'm working. Now, I was holding in my hand a red plastic Coca-Cola cup. I haven't seen them in a while. It's like an extra large, like bigger than a pint. They used to have them on bars and all the time. You would put your sodas in, like this thick plastic. And it was just a giant vodka tonic. And she's trying to get me to do shots with her. I told her, no, I can't drink while I'm working. And then took a big sip of my drink. And so she didn't like that. That got her mad. And I'm trying to figure out how to get her number. So finally I agree to do a shot. I go, all right, I'll do a shot with you. So I think we all did tequila shot. And then, the night just got away and they were getting ready to leave. And like, man, how am I going to get this girl's number? And they went outside to get a cab and they came back inside. And I got to do something. I got to say something. I got to get her number. I can't just let her leave. So her and one of her friend go back to the bathroom, and I've got the place totally cleared out except for the two of them, and I'm just waiting for them to get out of the bathroom and go clean the bathroom so we can leave. And I'm back in the back there by the bathroom, and they come out, and I'm standing there. And they got all their cleaning products there. So I don't think it looked too creepy. And I said, let me get your number. I'll give you a call. So she gave me her number, but it was one of those numbers that was hard to memorize. It was like 813, which is Tampa, and then, no doubles. I couldn't remember it. She told me 2-3 times. I didn't have a pen to write it down with because I was an idiot. And then her friend says, here, remember this number, and she shouts out her number, and that was like way better. It was like 813-777-1212 or something like that. Like, oh, okay, I remember that. And they left. And I went in the bathroom to clean the bathroom. I cleaned the men's room. And I went in the girls' room to clean the girls' room. And there on the sink was a disposable camera. And I remember, because I'm paying attention that they were messing with a disposable camera all night taking pictures. And I thought, it's those girls' camera. I said, all right, here's what I'll do. I'll take the camera and I'll call them tomorrow and see if they want me to send it back to them, because they were leaving to go back to Tampa that next day, Sunday. So it's a Saturday night. Now it's about 4 in the morning. So I get home 4:30. Get some sleep. I wake up around 10:30, 11 o'clock. Not thinking anything of it. Have my day. And then in the afternoon sometime, 4:30, 5 o'clock, I call them. And they're in South Carolina, which isn't far. A couple hours. Man, you guys stayed all day. If I'd known that, I would have called you earlier. We could have hung out, had lunch, whatever. And they're like, oh, well, we had to wait for O'Malley's to open before we left because we forgot our camera in there. And then we went back to get our camera, and nobody turned it in. So somebody stole our camera. And I was like, no, nobody stole your camera. I said, I knew it was your camera, so I took it because I was going to mail it to you. They're like, oh, thank God. And then the friend wanted to turn the car around and come back and get the camera. And I'm thinking, thank God, what's on this camera? So I finally told her, don't worry about it. I'll mail it tomorrow. Give me your address. So I get her address, 6001 Palm Place Lane. And and so then Monday morning I go to work, and they're at the hardware store, and there's a woman who works at the hardware store who's a little bit older than me. She probably was 30. She was married and she had a daughter. Daughter was 4 or 5 years old, super nice lady. And I started talking to her about the whole thing and telling her the story. I was so excited. And I said, I got to mail this camera. But I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to get the pictures developed so they don't have to pay for it. Because if y'all remember getting pictures developed, it wasn't cheap. It was like $7-$8. And she said, don't get the pictures developed. I said, why not? It's a nice thing to do. Pay to somebody, have somebody get their pictures developed. She goes, no, if you get the pictures developed, they'll think you're psycho trying to look at their pictures. Just send them the camera. And I argue with her. I'm like, no, nobody think that. It's just nice. Nice thing to do. Pay to get the pictures developed. And deep down inside, part of me probably wanted to see what was so exciting on there that they wanted to come back and get the thing. But Amy talked me into it. So I decided to go ahead and send the camera. So I went to the post office and got a little box and boxed it up. Sent it off to them. And a couple days went by, and my phone rang, and it was them, and they were calling to tell me that they were so happy that I sent the camera and didn't have the pictures developed. And I thought, huh, I guess Amy was right. But I played dumb, and I was like, oh, why is that? And I said, we decided that if you sent the camera back, you were okay. And we would talk to you and hang out with you. And if you sent the pictures developed back, it would mean that you were a psycho. And we would never talk to you again. So thank God for Amy. So we kept talking on the phone. Super exciting times, man. And all through the rest of January. And then she invited me to come down to Tampa. Every year in Tampa, they have this thing where they reenact the pirate invasion of Ybor by a pirate called Gaspar. I forget. I think that's his last name, Gaspar. Anyway, and it's called Gasparilla or Gasparilla. And yeah, it's basically Mardi Gras without the religious connotations. It's essentially the same idea, right? It's a big drunken festival, and the floats are all pirate-themed, and all the people on the floats dress up like pirates, and they throw beads. It's very Mardi Gras-y. And she was like, we want you to come. So I didn't want to go down there by myself. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. So my friend Ben, I went to my friend Ben, and I'm like, hey, you want to go to this thing? It's like a big party down in Tampa. And he's like, yeah, sure. So he drove, and we went down there to this thing and stayed with them for the weekend and had a great time. And the Gasparilla part was awful. There was a lot of really creepy men there who were taking advantage of the fact that it was crowded and that women were drunk and they were taking liberties with their hands that they shouldn't. And we went, it was the two of us, my now wife, my then future wife, and five or six of her friends who were females, and one of the friends had a boyfriend that came, but he was, it turned out later, only 16 or 17 years old. Because when we tried to, when the parade was over and we tried to go out for a drink, we couldn't get in anywhere because they were all carting people to the door. Because this kid, he might have been 18, I don't remember, but he wasn't 21. And so Ben and I turned into, Ben's a big guy too, but Ben and I turned into bodyguards almost immediately. Defending these young ladies' virtue from the throngs of creepy, drunken weirdos. So that's not a fun night. It's not fun to be the bodyguard in a crowded place you don't know, around drunk people. So we found like a little corner where we could kind of stuff them in the corner and stand in front of them and keep everyone away from them and still see the parade. And yeah, it wasn't that great. So, but the rest of the weekend was nice. Hung out, slept in, relaxed. And left there, and I invited her to come back to Raleigh for my birthday, which is the first week of March. So we talked on the phone, and first week of March she came back for my birthday. Had a good weekend that weekend, hung out. And then she said to me, I don't want to freak you out, but I want to invite you to my family for Easter. Come with me. Come down to Tampa, meet my family, come to church with us on Easter. Now, at this time, I'm not a church-going gentleman. But I, you know, I can't say no to spending time with this woman. So I'm like, yeah, I'd love to do that. And she's like, well, I got to tell you, it might not be that great because you have to meet my whole family, and I hate to do that to you since we're just getting to know each other. I said, well, how about I make you a deal? She goes, what's the deal? And I said, you come with me the first week of April to New York for a week. So I had vacation coming, and I was going up there. It was my grandmother's 80th birthday party. And my whole family was coming. So I'm like, I'll go to your Easter thing and meet your whole family, and then you come with me to New York and meet my whole family. And she's like, all right, yeah, I'll do that. So I go down. Now, Saturday, Easter Saturday, I told my boss I was doing this and I wanted to drive down. I had Sunday off. I was going to drive down Saturday after work. So I got him to agree to let me go early. And then as the day wore on, he started sending other people home and he wouldn't let me go. And I was like, dude, what's up, man? You said you were going to send me home at 12. And he kept thinking of reasons for me to stay. So he finally let me go at about 5 o'clock. So I race home, change my clothes. I call her up, like, hey, I'm going to be really late. It's like a 10-hour drive. And I get in my car and I start going. And I'm driving down I-95, hit I-10, cut across the state of Florida, hit 75. Now, the entire trip down I-10, I didn't see a car, either direction. It's now Easter Saturday, about 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. I make the turn onto 75 South, and I'm driving down, and I don't see another car. And my car's speedometer, it was a 1989 Chevy Corsica, 2.8 liter fuel injected engine, and the speedometer goes to 85. Now, being a young knucklehead, I had already figured out that the car would go faster than that. So I round the little ramp, on ramp, onto 75. And in very short order, I get to 85 miles an hour. Now, keep in mind, I haven't seen a car for 2 hours going in either direction. So I decide to see if I can cut the trip a little short. So I really kind of lay on the accelerator, and the little speedometer thing goes past 85 to about where 95 would be. But there's no number there. And then the needle stops, and then I step on the gas, and then the car accelerates more. flying in this car. And I'm going, and out of the corner of my eye, in the center of the median, there's these concrete, those concrete barricades. And out of the corner of my eye, I see something odd over the top of the barricade. And I look, and the whole world slows down, and I just see the very top of a set of police lights. I know if he's there, he's clocking. And I know if he's clocking, he's clocking me. I know if he's clocking me, I'm getting a ticket. Before he could get his lights on and get himself onto the highway, I was already pulled over to stop about a mile down the road. I watched him in the rearview mirror come onto the highway with his lights on, and he just pulled up behind me. I think that was the right move. I think that helped. He comes up to the car. This giant Florida highway patrolman. Big black guy. Thick southern accent. He says to me, "Son, you know how fast you were going?" And I said, "Honestly?" And he laughs and he says, "Yeah, honestly." And I said, "No, sir, I don't know how fast I was going." And he said, "Why don't you know how fast you were going?" And I said, "Well, the speedometer only goes up to 85 miles an hour." He didn't laugh at that. And he said, "What's the hurry?" So I told him the whole story. Met this girl. I think this is the one. Going to meet her family for the first time, Easter Sunday. My boss held me up at work in Raleigh, North Carolina. Now I was going to be super late, only get a few hours sleep before I had to go to church, meet her whole family. I didn't want to embarrass myself. I was trying to get down there as fast as I could so I could get some sleep. The whole time he's just looking at me. And he says, "License and registration, insurance." So I tell him they're in the glove box. He says, "It's fine." I go get the stuff out of the glove box because I'm conscientious and don't want to get shot by a policeman. And I give him all the stuff, and he walks back to his police cruiser for what seems like an absolute eternity. Probably was 5 minutes. He came back up to the car, sweating bullets, and he said to me, "I'll never forget it." He says, "I got good news, and I got bad news." And I think about it a minute, and I say, "Okay, what's the good news?" And he says, "I'm not going to impound your car and arrest you." And I said, "What's the bad news?" He said, "I'm writing a ticket for 19 miles an hour over the speed limit." And I said, "Why 19? He said, "Because at 20, I have to arrest you and impound your car." And I said, "Just out of curiosity," I signed the ticket. I said, "Just out of curiosity, how fast was I going?" He says, "I clocked you 110 miles an hour." And I looked at him, and I looked at the car, and I looked at him, and I said, "In this thing?" And he said, "I'll never forget." He said, "Nobody's more surprised than me." There you go, Chevy. You made a 4-door race car and you didn't even know it. So I get back on the road, get down there. It's nearly 4 in the morning. By the time I find the place in the dark and get in there and get inside, go to sleep. Get up bright and spanking early and get showered, dressed, shave. Go to church, meet her family. It's about 10 of them, 15 of them. She's got some sisters, some half-brothers, step-brother, couple aunts and uncles, a grandparent, two grandparents. No big deal. The only big deal in that was I met her dad that day, and he's a giant, and that was extraordinarily intimidating. How many people in the world I look up to, and him I look way up to. He's 7 feet tall, big guy, 300 pounds. Maybe a little more than 300 pounds. But anyway, so that was kind of whatever. And then I thought, oh dear God, what have I done? Because what I knew that she didn't know was that my family is enormous. And when I thought, meet her whole family, I thought it was going to be something similar to what she was going to go through when she met my whole family and a week later. And that was not the case. Easter at her parents was in her mom's living room, dining room, kitchen. My grandmother's 80th birthday party, they'd rented out the biggest hall in the county. And there were in excess of 100 of our closest family members scheduled to attend. So I drove back. Actually, that night, Sunday night, I was supposed to leave and go back because I had to go to work Monday morning. And she convinced me to go with her to see E.T. in the movie theater. They re-released E.T. Easter week 2001. in the theater, and she wanted to go see it, and I had no interest in it. I never liked that movie the first time around. And I wanted to drive, go to bed in my own bed. But the thought of staying and taking her to the movies was pretty convincing. So I did it. I took her to the movie, Easter Sunday night. Got a couple hours sleep. Got up really early. I think I'd be to work at 11. So I had to leave there at 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning, something like that. And I drove straight from her apartment to work. Worked that day, went home and went to sleep. I didn't work Monday nights at the bar because Monday nights were Monday night football. And the girls wanted to work Monday nights because they got more tips. So anyway, that was that. A week later, she flew up from Tampa to Raleigh Airport. I went and picked her up. And we drove up to New York. And we spent a couple days with a buddy of mine in New York City. She'd never been to New York City, so we did that. Hung out in New York City for a couple days. And then went to my grandmother's party where my poor wife had to meet 100 drunken knuckleheads. And yeah, so I subjected her to that. And then we drove back to Raleigh. On the drive back to Raleigh, so this is like maybe April 2nd, 3rd, 4th, somewhere in there. Somewhere in between Maryland and Delaware. I said to her, "We should get married." And she said, "We should get married." And my heart stopped beating. Because that wasn't the response I expected. I thought she'd laugh or say yeah or whatever. But I realized in the tone of her voice, she was dead serious. And then I thought, sweet Jesus, I better marry her now. Or this awesome, gorgeous, fun, beautiful woman is going to realize what an idiot I am and not want to marry me anymore. So when I was able to breathe again, I said, we should elope. Because I thought to myself, the time it takes to plan a wedding, she's going to see through this cool facade that I've put up and not be interested anymore. So she says, yeah, let's elope. And I thought, holy crap, this is happening. So we drive back to Raleigh, where we were going to spend the night, and I was going to take her to the airport the next day and go back to work. And we go to my apartment, and I grabbed a couple things, some change of clothes and a couple things I thought I might need. And we drove up to my job at the hardware store, and Goodwill Hunting was big at the time. And I said, I slid a paper through the door and said, sorry, but I got to see about a girl, which is something that was in that movie. And my boss and I used to talk about the movie, so I thought he would get that. And then we drove to Florida. And so I'd been driving forever. We stopped in D.C. to have dinner. My uncle at the time was in Arlington, and we stopped in Arlington and had dinner. I think we went to a Thai restaurant, which would be the only time I ever went to a Thai restaurant, but for some reason I have no recollection of it. I do remember going, but I don't remember any of the food. Seems strange if it's the only time I ever ate Thai food. But there you go. And by the time we got like halfway through Florida, I literally couldn't stay awake. She had been sleeping for quite a while. I think since we left Raleigh, pretty much she'd been asleep. And I stopped to get gas, and she woke up, and I said, I can't do it anymore. I can't drive another foot. I've been driving, you know, we got up that morning in New York. Now we're in Florida. It's the next day, right? So we drove to D.C. and had dinner. Drove to Raleigh. It's now the middle of the night. Did what all we had to do there and drove through the night. So now it's, you know, 24-something hours I'm awake and been driving the whole time. I said, I can't do it anymore. I'm going to kill us if I try to keep driving. So she goes, I'll drive the rest of the way. I said, all right. So I went and got in the passenger seat, fell asleep. I woke up and we got to her apartment. And we started trying to figure it out. I was like, all right, well, I'm going to have to get a job. And we'll have to figure out our living situation. She had three roommates. I think she had two roommates. She had one time had three roommates. One of them had already moved out. So it was a 3-bedroom apartment, 2 roommates. And so we were going to get married and we were going to get our own apartment. And I was going to get a job. So I went to go look for a job the next day. I got up. That day I slept most of the day. The next day I got up, got my shirt and tie on, combed my hair, shaved, and went to go look for a job. And so I was going to, I had that experience at the hardware store as the assistant manager. So I was going to Home Depot, Lowe's, hardware, you know, hardware stores trying to apply for a job. But they're very corporate. It's not that easy. It's not like you walk in and say, hi, I'd like to work here, and they hire you. In the process, her father worked at an automotive tire store. Should I tell you the name of the company? Her dad worked at a Firestone store as the store manager. And I was driving by the very store he worked at. And I thought to myself, I should go in and reintroduce myself, because that evening we had made plans to go to his house for dinner, and at this dinner I was going to ask him for his daughter's hand in marriage. And I was nervous because I only met him once. And here I was, this 22-year-old, I think I just turned 23. No, I don't know, 22, 23, it's 2001, no, it's 2002, so I was just turned 23, 23-year-old knucklehead with no job, and I was going to ask him if I could marry his daughter. I started thinking about the fact that if it was me and my daughter, I would probably say no. And it didn't help any that he was so big. It was intimidating. So I thought, what I'll do is I'll go to his work and I'll say hello as a way to introduce myself, reintroduce myself to him. And that way he'll think more fondly of me that evening. So I went in to go see him and he recognized me, but he didn't realize where he recognized me from. And he got me confused with a young man who'd come looking for a job that was supposed to come back that day. And he was very busy. And he said, hey, it's good to see you. And I thought, oh, thank God he recognizes me. And he goes, here, fill this out. And he handed me a job application and he walked away. And I thought, maybe she called him. Maybe she told him I was coming. I was looking for a job. Well, regardless of what was going on, I didn't want to aggravate him. So I filled out the application. And he comes back a little bit and he says, you got that done? And I'm like, yeah, well, I got it all done. He goes, all right, come with me. And he walks me through this door into this smoky office complex, like a bunch of offices and like a lobby area. It turns out it was the district office was in his building. And he walks me in there into this guy's office, and on this very, very large gentleman's desk is a hubcap, an old 15-inch metal hubcap flipped upside down, and it is full to the point of complete overflowing with cigarette butts. The guy smoked so much that he converted a 15-inch hubcap to his ashtray. And my now father-in-law says, hey Don, this is the guy I was telling you about. And then he walks out of the room, gone. And Don says to me, have a seat. And Don is one of these guys who loves to talk about himself. So he starts telling me about himself and his own professional career path and how he got where he's at today. And he's not really asking me any questions. But the one thing was that he used to run, at one time, he got sent from Buffalo, where he was originally from, to Albany to run the Firestone store in Albany. And I'm from sort of near Albany. So I grasp on that it's something we have in common, and I tell him that story. And then he tells me the whole story about the whole thing. And we're having, by the end of it, we're having a grand old time. And he says, hang on a second. And he makes a phone call, and he calls someone and says, I got a guy you got to meet. And then he sends me to go meet a store manager named Nick. And I drive over there and talk to Nick about the Yankees for a little bit. Later, I found out that was his interview style, was he would just have a conversation with you about something totally unrelated to the job, because what he wanted to know was whether or not you could have a conversation with a stranger. I had no idea at the time. So we're talking about the Yankees, and then he says, you want to work here? Are you looking for work or something? I said, yeah. And he goes, all right, yeah, I'll give you a shot. So there you go. First day in town, got myself a job by accident. And that night we went to dinner at her dad's house, and the whole time I was so nervous. I can't remember anything about it. Super, super nervous the entire time. And after the meal, he excused himself to the family room and sat down to watch TV. And I worked up the courage to go over there and ask him the question that I was there to ask him. Sir, could I have your daughter's hand in marriage? His response is etched in my brain. I braced myself for the no that was coming. And he said, are you sure you know what you're getting yourself into? I wouldn't include that part, but like I said yesterday, my wife doesn't listen to the podcast. I don't think she likes that part of the story. And I'm an introspective guy, so I thought about what he said for a few seconds, and I said, now that you say that, I kind of don't know. Maybe I don't know what I'm getting myself into. And he said, son, if you'd like to marry her, you have my blessing. I was so happy. I went and told her. And then the next day I went with her friend to the jewelry store, because I didn't know anything was, and bought her an engagement ring. And that next evening I took her out to Clearwater Beach, where my grandparents had vacationed every year for their marriage. And I went out on the beach with her, and we went for a stroll in the beautiful moonlight under the stars on Clearwater Beach with the sound of the waves crashing. And we walked out a ways and got out in front of her, kneeled down in front of her, and begged her to marry me. Now, obviously, that's kind of cheating, because she already had agreed to do that back in Maryland, and we were sort of planning it together all along, but I thought it was important. You know, these traditions are important. I think it's super important that a young man ask a woman's father if he may have her hand in marriage, and I think it's super important that a man also prostrate himself in front of his bride-to-be. Let her know what a privilege it would be to be her husband, father of her children, forever and ever. So she said yes. And our plans to elope got hijacked by her mother. Her mother didn't like the idea of us eloping. She wanted us to have a church wedding. And we agreed to modify our plans to accommodate her mother's wishes under the condition that there would be very small, just family there. We would do it on a Friday instead of a Saturday, and that we would do it the following Friday, which would have been April 19th, 2002. And her mother agreed to all that, and then behind the scenes got her tail in gear. And because she had to then get the pastor of her church to agree to perform the wedding. And he had met my wife a few times because she was older and didn't live at home. And mom lived in a little town outside of Florida, or outside of Tampa, called Plant City. If you have strawberries in February and March, you might want to look at the box. They probably come from there. But regardless, so the pastor agreed to marry us under the condition that we do some sort of very brief marriage counseling with him. So we had to go that week that we were getting married, I think Monday and Tuesday night, to the church for marriage counseling, where we talked to him a very little bit, and he had us watch the Five Love Languages thing. And that was it. That was all he needed to do, I guess, and he was satisfied. So that Friday we got married, and I called my mother that weekend after I proposed on the beach, and my beautiful bride-to-be accepted my proposal. I called my mother to tell her I was engaged, and she said, that's nice. It's good to be engaged. And I said, well, yeah, and we're getting married next Friday, the 19th. Which, both my parents were working at the time, that might not have been the nicest thing I've ever did to them. My father was less than amused by the whole thing. But they came, to the wedding. My father, I think, begrudgingly, when they came. And we had this church wedding. The church that my mother-in-law goes to is a Southern Baptist church of a certain tradition where they don't believe in alcohol, music, there aren't hymns, or dancing. And the reception was in the church hall, which made the reception fairly interesting for myself, a Yankee Irish Catholic bartender. And my wife was more used to that, although she lived in Tampa and was also had been a professional bartender. Although at the time I met her, she wasn't. But she certainly was known to have a drink now and again. And it was very strange for me and for my parents. So the reception was in the little church hall there, and there was a cake, and they had Sprite. But the funny thing about... it's like vegans with their faux turkey and their tofu hot dogs and stuff. And they got new hamburgers now that made of beets, so when you bite into it, it bleeds. So there's a funny thing where there's no alcohol allowed, and we had Sprite to drink, but they bought two champagne glasses for my wife and I to have our Sprite in so they could take pictures. That's funny. It's this whole culture of people who don't believe in alcohol whatsoever, but somehow recognize the importance of having a drink at a wedding. So in the pictures, it looks like we're having champagne, but we're not. It's Sprite in a glass. So we had a piece of cake, took some pictures. There was no music or dancing. Everybody stood around and chatted a little bit. And I said to my wife, well, let us go. This has been fun. Let's get out of here. So we were the first people to leave our own reception. I have no idea what everyone did after we left. Two of her brothers had decorated the car, which I thought was very funny. And we went and got in her 1993 Honda Accord, and we drove off to our honeymoon, which was scheduled to be, I think, just Friday night, Saturday night at a hotel in Orlando. She's going to take me to Disney World, because I'd never been in my life, and she thought that was a horrible injustice, because she grew up in Florida where they went all the time, and I was very skeptical that that would be a fun thing to do for two adults. Ended up being a really good time. We had a blast. Although I don't know that you could do anything on a honeymoon with your beloved and not have a good time, but that one turned out to be a nice memory. And we ended up staying. I didn't have to be to work, I don't think, till May. Because I'd taken a drug test and all that stuff, but all that, we're waiting for it all to come back. I think she called in sick to work Monday. I think we stayed there the weekend and then Monday night as well. Sunday night and maybe Monday night as well. And then she went back Tuesday. So that was that. So there it was. So if you actually do the math, we met, I'm going to call it January 1st just because. So 3.5 months later, we were married. But if you count all the days we actually spent together, including the first night at O'Malley's, and then the weekend of Gasparilla, and then the weekend of my birthday, and then the weekend of Easter, and the week in New York, and the week after New York in Florida before we got married, it was 21 days. We had spent 21 days together when we got married, and a whole lot of people thought we were crazy. And I don't think, if you took bets at our wedding, and not that the Southern Baptist bet, I don't think, but if you took bets at our wedding, that thing was going to last, I think you would have gotten a lot of no's. I don't think anybody was really thinking that was a smart move on our part. But here we are. 16 years, 4 kids, 2 states later. Still happily married. Not that it's been easy every day. Because for you young folks out there that aren't married yet, I'm here to tell you that it's not that easy to be married. And that all the fairy tales are lying to you. It takes work. You got to decide to do it. You got to wake up in the morning. It's like going to work. You have to wake up in the morning and decide to go to work. Every day. Never goes away. The desire to not go to work is probably always be there. unless you're one of the very few blessed people who just does what you want to do and somehow gets paid for it. But most of us have a job to do that, if all else being equal, we'd rather not do. And being married's like that, man. There's some days you wake up and it's great, and there's some days you wake up and you got to make the decision to love that woman or that man and be a good husband and be a good wife. You might not feel like it, but that's not an option. You got to do it. Otherwise, you get divorced. When you don't need to get divorced, you just need to get up and be a good husband and be a good wife. So that's the secret. The secret to marrying a woman after knowing her for 21 days and staying married for 16 years is working at it. Not giving up when it's hard. So that's my fun story. My fun anniversary story for today. How I met my lovely wife and tricked her into marrying me. And I didn't know any of this at the time. It turns out she's the most fantastic mother I could ever imagine to my four lovely children. She's absolutely amazing. She's a great cook, which I didn't know either. She's a highly, highly organized individual, which I'm not, which obviously frustrates the shit out of her. But it works because, you know, somebody's got to be organized. And she's just fantastic. Makes me laugh every day. She's a wonderful woman. I feel very, very blessed to have her in my life. So, I wish she would listen to this because I could say at the end of it that it's for you and I love you. But, she doesn't listen to the podcast. So I hope you enjoyed the story. I hope you got something out of it. Sometimes in life you gotta take some risks. And once you take the risk, sometimes you gotta just hang on for dear life. Don't let go. So listen, I hope you all have a fantastic day today on my anniversary. Have yourselves a drink. A toast to my wife and I. Thanks so much for tuning in. Listen, I hope you all have a great day. And we'll see you tomorrow.